The Behind the Bets podcast with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings. Download the app for free today.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you. This is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Thursday, June 18th. We're going to be breaking down this weekend's UFC card again in Las Vegas. Some interesting matchups. Matthew Holt of US Integrity will be joining me momentarily. We are fired up for the main card. We each have some strong plays, or at least strong in terms of our opinions. Hopefully they end up being strong results as well. Christina, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing well. I'm getting used to this working out of my office, my home office. You know, you don't always shower. I have been growing the beard again. This time I went shaved the neck. So that's something a colleague of mine who has sort of a beard has said, you know, because I complained the first time I did it about how itchy I was. So he's like, shave the neck part. You might really enjoy it. And I actually really do. I like never scratch now. Now, whether I like the optics of it, that's a whole nother story. But at least I'm comfortable in it.
Yeah, I think now that everything is starting to open up, salons are opening up, barbershops are opening up, it seems like everybody is getting a little bit more comfortable, especially being at home. Now we can cut our hair, we can do a little bit more of normal life.
I'm still relegated to quarantine life because I don't want to go out and about. I like my just staying at home and not doing anything. So I will continue to be just a vegetable on the couch and then come into my office to tape the podcast and then content for ESPN.com's chalk section. Okay, so Matthew Holt standing by momentarily. But first, I want to remind everyone that my ESPN colleague, Scott Van Pelt, also has a podcast called SB Pod. Make sure you download and subscribe to Behind the Bets and SB Pod on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I know Stanford Steve makes a cameo often as well. And the Bear and Steve have their pod this week as well, breaking down the Belmont. Also, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at over $100,000. Download the DraftKings app and enter code Doug, that's D-O-U-G, at sign up. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. But now let's bring in Matthew Holt.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to bring in a regular here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Matthew Holt. You've been getting a lot of positive fanfare out there on Twitter and other platforms. So we appreciate your time and all the work you put in.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be on and exciting card this week. You know, I don't want to say last week's card was a dud because we had so many amazing knockouts on that card. It was actually really fun. But going into that card, obviously the main event and the main card itself didn't have the fanfare or spectacle that this one does. This is a really impressive, really fun main card this weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword, right? So the beauty of the UFC is that every fight, including the undercards, can offer such excitement, fight of the night, reward bonuses, and just the nature of MMA, just the contrast in styles and all the nuances make it such an exciting sport outside of just the main event or co-main event. But with that being said, we are sort of, you know, we tend to gravitate towards the bigger names and the higher profile fights and the hype of about. So we're human. So we like the big names and we like the intriguing matchups. So it's a great point on your part, but you're right. It was definitely worth watching last week, but let's get into this. And last week we started with the undercard. I know you had a lot of plays there, but I'm going to start with the main event and just kind of work backwards that way. Interesting line move here with Alexander Volkov and Curtis Blaydes. It's gone up to $4 now. It was 200, I want to say. Look, Blaydes, the third ranked heavyweight right now. Volkov is the seventh rank, so an intriguing matchup on that regard. Blaydes, he's never gone past three rounds in his career. Do you like is there value here at the dog at all?
I took the dog, and once it got to plus 300 on the dog is where we're seeing a pretty consistent minus 400 across the board. So you should be able to get plus 300 anywhere, maybe even a little better than plus 300 as you shop around. But I certainly think there's value on Alexander Volkov. And I think there's been two sort of sentiments that are starting to hit the market that are causing this line shift. Number one is people are really into Curtis Blaydes and his takedown ability compared to the takedown defense of Alexander Volkov, and that Blaydes is just going to get him down and ground and pound him. But if you look at Alexander Volkov, he's 7-1 in his last eight fights, and the only loss was to Derek Lewis, which came with literally 14 seconds left in a fight that Volkov had literally dominated for two rounds and another 4 minutes and 46 seconds before getting hit with one monster right hand and knocked out. And suddenly the narrative this week has been Alexander Volkov has no chin. Well, I don't know that that's true. Alexander Volkov's been in there with a lot of big punchers, Greg Hardy, former champion Fabricio Werdum. He's one of the only guys to ever stop Blagoy Ivanov. I mean, this is a legit guy who, if he had survived 14 more seconds against Derek Lewis in that fight, we'd be talking about Volkov fighting for the heavyweight title rather than fighting for, you know, what sort of sets up as an elimination bout here. And the other thing I think that is interesting is, you know, Curtis Blaydes has only lost two fights ever, both of them to Francis Ngannou, both by knockout. But what we did see in one of them only 45 seconds in, so he's been knocked out a couple of times himself, is that he has fallen in love with his wrestling way too much. You know, Curtis Blaydes, for all the respect he gets as a power puncher, has zero first-round knockouts in the UFC and hasn't had a first-round knockout since 2014 in his professional debut. Basically, he's not a one-punch bomber like a lot of these heavyweights are. He's a guy who gets a lot of knockdowns by securing takedowns and then having a very top-heavy game and with heavyweights that you get a lot of ground-and-pound KOs. But he also, you know, he telegraphs those takedown attempts. And we saw it once against Francis Ngannou, who landed a huge knee, which led to follow-up strikes, you know, in the KO there. I'm not sure Volkov can't do the same thing here. And considering the fact that Blaydes has never had a first-round knockout in the UFC means this one's probably going to go into the second round. And if it does, that jab and straight right hand by Alexander Volkov are deadly. We're talking about a guy who has 20 knockouts in his career, so a little bit underrated on the power department. And in the striking department, it's hard to deal with a guy who's 6'7", 260 pounds, and a very technical striker who's going to throw a really stiff jab with a perfectly straight right hand behind it.
Yeah, and that's 20 knockouts and 31 wins, so two-thirds of his wins. So that's certainly good ratio in that regard. That is surprising. I didn't know Blaydes had never had a knockout in the first round. That I did not expect, because none of his fights have ever gone past three. I thought, to your point, we see so many of these heavyweights being sort of that option for the one-hit wonder and usually deliver. Now, the over-under is 2.5 here, under shaded to the -145 neighborhood. Any thoughts there? If you don't think it's going to be a first round, then you're kind of banking on second round if you go the under.
I actually like the over a tiny bit here. And what's really interesting about this fight, and I thought the bookmakers made a wonderful adjustment. So if you go back and look at heavyweight fights in the UFC, 90% of them have a over-under of 1.5 rounds, and then they just adjust the juice accordingly. This fight has an over-under of 2.5 rounds, and it's not just because it's a 5-round main event rather than a 2-round fight. It's the simple fact that Blaydes has never got a first-round stoppage in the UFC. In fact, the only one of his fights that ended in the first round was his 45-second blowout knockout loss to Francis Ngannou. And on the other side of it, Volkov also is a very patient, very technical striker. He does have 3 wins by knockout out of his, I think he has 5 or 6 UFC wins. 3 of those do come by knockout, including knockout wins over Fabricio Werdum and Stefan Struve fairly recently. But at the end of the day, he's probably going to try to look to avoid the takedown, use that great jab, start landing some right hands. At plus money, I actually like the over here a little bit. I could see either side. I could see the ground and pound start to wear him down and him get finished himself if he loses in the 3rd or 4th round. And I could also see a situation where he's able to stuff takedowns and his striking just gives Curtis Blaydes all kinds of problems here. And again, maybe this thing carries into the 3rd or 4th round on that side at plus money. But I like the underdog at a big plus, and I like the over at a little plus here. So I'm plus in the main event.
Yeah, I tweeted about it, just the stomach it takes to bet over in under or over. Really, the over-unders in a UFC fight are just so painful. It's like soccer in so many ways. But you're right. You just got to grind. Let's go to the next fight on the card. Josh Emmett, Shane Burgos. Burgos about a $140, $145. He's only got one career loss on his resume. Smaller cage here has favored the strikers. I want to ask you, because I know you're on Burgos here. He has a history of keeping his hands too low and getting caught at times. Any concern there here with Emmett and his punching power?
100% concern here. And we saw it last week with Aquaman Ivy, where we know that these power strikers are especially dangerous in the first round when they're still at full power, when they're still at full strength. And Josh Emmett especially, because every punch he throws is with full force and tenacity on it, that he is going to be very scary and very dangerous. If you have Shane Burgos in this fight, you're certainly going to be sweating every minute of the first round because every shot Josh Emmett throws is so ferocious. But Shane Burgos is really good. This was one of the more highly rated prospects that the UFC had signed when he made his UFC debut. He was undefeated. He had all these finishes. And upon coming into the UFC, I mean, he knocked out Charles Rosa, beat Pepe Castro. His only loss was to Calvin Kattar, who's suddenly a top five, featherweight. And that Calvin Kattar loss has obviously aged very well. Kattar, if he wins his next fight against Dustin Poirier, will probably get a title shot. And he responded really well to that Kattar knockout loss, beating Cub Swanson, a former two-time title challenger, most recently a knockout in his last fight. I love Burgos' diverse game. I like that Team Tiger Schulman camp in general. They have a couple of fighters on this card. And I think over the course of an entire fight, I don't see how Josh Emmett can win this fight any other way by knockout and probably knockout early in the fight, because I think as the fight goes on, Shane Burgos' volume, his scrambling, his clinch game will all be a little bit too much for Josh Emmett. So, you know, we have a guy here who has one path to victory, a knockout in the first half of the fight, and then we have a guy in Shane Burgos who can win by submission, win by decision, win by knockout. He has pretty good punching power himself. I just like the diversity of the amount of different ways that Shane Burgos can win this fight in comparison to the amount of ways that Josh Emmett probably can. And as the price continues to drop, because Josh Emmett's punching power in the smaller cage is making him a very popular underdog, you could probably lay as low as $1.30 with a guy who should probably be around $1.60.
Okay, so you really like him there. I have a feeling the next fight we're going to talk about is probably your favorite on the card, and that's Pennington against Bruneau. Feed the listener.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite bets in a while here. And, you know, Raquel Pennington has maybe fought the toughest strength of schedule ever in the history of women's MMA. Here's the list of some of the people she's fought. Amanda Nunes, the greatest ever. Holly Holm, she fought twice, former bantamweight champion. Former featherweight champion Jermaine Durandamy, former strawweight champion Jessica Andrade, former title challenger Kat Zingano, former bantamweight champion Misha Tate, who she beat. I mean, that is an unbelievable murderer's row of fighters for a young lady who only has 18 career fights. So people look at that 10-8 record and go, oh, man, Raquel Pennington, she's not very good. The simple fact is she had a really impressive four-fight win streak and then lost almost 2 years to the life-threatening injuries after a terrible ATV accident and came back off that accident, and her first fight back was a title fight against Amanda Nunes. Talk about getting thrown to the wolves, but she did the UFC some favors at a time when they really needed some challengers for Durandamy and Holly Holm and Nunes. She stepped in and fought that murderer's row. What I think was impressive, people say, wow, she lost three of her last four, yeah, against the best women in the world, is she fought Irene Aldana at a period where the UFC was pushing Aldana. She was undefeated in the UFC. She was a long, lean striker who had wonderful kicks. She originally is from Mexico, and the UFC is trying to push that Latino fighters. And Rocky Pennington handled her really quite well. That's a top eight bantamweight in the world that Raquel Pennington reminded us how good she is. And the other part of this is, you know, the difference between boxing and MMA is that most MMA fighters don't hit their peak until 30 or 31 years old because of the fact that they normally enter the UFC or enter MMA off a singular and sole focus. So they're either a collegiate wrestler, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu grappler, or they're a kickboxer or a boxer. And they need to learn all the different aspects of MMA before they can become great. So you don't see a lot of 21, 22, 23-year-old great fighters. Raquel Pennington is now 31 years old, right in her prime, trains at a great gym, has fought the best fighters in the world. And I think this is UFC throwing her a bone here. Marion Renault is now 42 years old. She's lost two straight fights to fighters who were ranked well below Raquel Pennington and didn't look good in either situation. And at 42, she's probably closer to retirement than she is at making any type of run in the division. And I think this is UFC throwing Pennington a big bone here because that division's getting pretty weak and is aging, and the champion Amanda Nunes is hinting at retirement. She just defended the 145-pound belt, hasn't defended the 135-pound belt in quite some time now. I think UFC is rewarding Pennington for all those tough fights, giving her a much easier fight here. And history says with Raquel Pennington, every time she steps down in class just a little bit, including Irene Aldana, who's still a top 10 bantamweight, she wins those fights, including she beat former champion Misha Tate. I don't see how Marion Renault wins this fight. And the line movement's interesting. It opened as high as 180, 185 on Pennington, went all the way down to 135, 140, basically in the very earliest of moves. But we're seeing it slowly, steadily climb back up here. I was able to lay 145, but I saw this morning it's already back up to 155. My guess is by fight time, we're going to be much closer to that 180 opener than we are that 140 bottom of the market. And I think this is a fight that sets up really well for Raquel Pennington against an aging 42-year-old, much lesser ranked and equivalent fighter in Marion Renault.
Going off script a little bit, I just want to ask you, so I agree with you that the UFC fighters take a while to develop their game, but I think that's changed because of the development of the youth groups. And so fighters are becoming more MMA familiar and savvy at a younger age than maybe 10 years ago. Do you still think that's the peak age?
I agree with that point exactly, that fighters are coming into the UFC more well-rounded and with a more diverse skill set than they ever have in the history of MMA. But as a, general rule, it still takes a while to really perfect all the different crafts you need to be able to do in scrambling and submission defense and offense and wrestling defense and offense and the multitude of striking abilities. No matter where you've trained, I still think it's hard. Look, the Sean O'Malley's of the world are proving us wrong, but, then we look at some of the other people on the card. We just saw a 20-year-old fight last week, and he didn't fare so well I'm trying to remember the fight there that we saw 2 weeks ago with the 20-year-old grappler who really got beat up. But overall, it's tough. I still think there's a development cycle that's much different than normal sports like boxing. So you look at someone at 31 in MMA terms, that's usually about the peak, 29, 30, 31, 32, rather than sometimes in boxing, we see that peak 25, 26, 27, 28.
Interesting. Okay, let's keep it moving here. We should remind our listeners that it's going to be at the same venue in Las Vegas, a smaller cage. Just a friendly reminder on that front. This next fight, I got zero opinion. Muhammad and Good. Obviously Good has demonstrated ability to avoid takedowns. The statistics are there, but Muhammad is a beast. Minus -130 here for Muhammad in that neighborhood. It's a hard pass for me. What about you?
It's a hard pass for me too. The one thing I will say in Lyman Good's favor, although I would be hoping to get a little bit better underdog odds on him, I were going to take him, is that he does train at Team Tiger Shulman. We talked about that gym with Shane Burgos. And a lot of time when a gym has multiple fighters preparing for fights on the same card, you get all the striking coaches in there and all the grappling coaches in there. And it tends to be a positive experience for all the fighters in that gym. So my guess is that Lyman Good probably had a really good, he's not a standard camp because these fights are getting announced so fast now, but probably a really good 3 weeks dealing with all those trainers who may not otherwise come in just to train Lyman Good because they have so many other fighters. But the fact that Burgos is also fighting in a very important fight at featherweight, which, could put somebody one fight away from a title shot, I think that's why we're seeing a little bit of the love on Lyman Good. A lot of people think he might be able to stuff the takedowns, and if he does, he might be the better striker, and he's probably coming off a good camp at Team Tiger Shulman. With all that being said, I'm still passing because I think Belal Muhammad is better than Lyman Good, and I think the odds are about where they should be, so hard pass for me as well.
Next fight has maybe the biggest line on the card. Oh, excuse me, obviously the heavyweight. I forgot about that one for a sec. So Roosevelt Roberts laying 240 here in a lightweight matchup with Jim Miller. Obviously the veteran Miller, 45 career MMA bouts, 31-14 record. But Roberts is a hefty favorite for a reason. He's got 6 inches of a height advantage, 10 years younger, 10-1 in his career in the MMA. I think for me, it's Roberts or pass. I would just feel like a sucker on Miller. You know, getting all that plus money, that enticement on the dog, and then you just, the fight starts, and you're like, I got no shot.
Yeah, so what's interesting to this fight for me is I started looking at the total here, and I agree. First of all, Roosevelt Roberts is a really impressive young prospect, and I think he's still on that development stage because he doesn't do everything right that, you know, that you'd expect from an elite MMA fighter, but he's certainly a really intriguing prospect against Jim Miller, who's fought everyone there is in the UFC at this point, dealt with Lyme disease prior. But obviously, you know, his win losses over recent history aren't very good. He's 3-6 in his last 9 fights. And anytime he stepped up in class, whether it was Poirier, Dan Hooker, Francisco Trinaldo, Anthony Pettis, Charles Oliveira, he not only lost, but in several of those got finished. But when you look at Jim Miller's, you know, fights, when he does win lately, for a long time, it was, you know, this was a guy who could grind you out. But his last 3 wins all come by submission. And I thought, look, at his age, Jim Miller is obviously susceptible to getting finished himself. We've seen it more in his more recent losses. He's been finished, whereas, you know, he was always kind of an iron chin guy. So in a situation where we have the smaller octagon, an aging fighter getting close to retirement who has been finished in his recent losses, but yet all 3 of his recent wins are all by submission. And at the end of the day, if Jim Miller's going to win this fight, he has one and one and only one chance, and that's catching Roosevelt Roberts in a bad position and then submitting him. Roberts is still a little immature in his positioning while the scrambles are going on. Jim Miller certainly has an opportunity to get a submission here. I don't like his opportunities to get that submission enough to maybe bet the underdog here, as I think Roberts is really good. But I think playing the under plus money might have a little value in the small octagon.
Solid analysis. It kind of protects you. It's a chance to also bet the favorite without having to lay 240. So I like that across the board. And that's under 2.5. So it's not one of those 1.5 guys. So 2.5 here with Roberts. And the juice is about, you know, neutral, about a pick 'em here. I see some a little over money, actually, minus a quarter. The next fight just brought a smile to my face seeing it on the card because in the broadcasting world, we don't send resumes for when we apply for jobs because it's all about how you look on the screen. So we send resume reels. So a lot of times your resume reel will be like kind of a bullet point format. If you can kind of visualize that, it's just a montage of clips, right? It's like quick 8 to 10 second clips of you in a wide variety, serious stuff, fun stuff, highlights, you know, reporting, all that kind of stuff. So my resume reel, like 10 years ago, had Clay Guida fighting. And, like it was I was on the local news in Las Vegas, and my anchor at the end of the segment was talking to me in kind of what they call a 3-shot, me and the 2 anchors, the 3 of us. And she was talking about how it's hard to fight with all that hair. It's got to be hard. And I said, well, it's a little bit more sophisticated than hair pulling. And but the fact that he's still on these cards, a 35-19 MMA record. He's been in the UFC since 2006. He took me back to my old demo reel. Here he is still chugging along.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Clay Guida is unbelievable, and he usually gets some public support in these fights. And what's interesting to me about this fight is this is one of the few fights on the card that I don't see how either guy is going to finish the other guy. Neither one of them has big power. Neither one of them gets finished too much. But I'm very weary of laying the favorite here. Bobby Green might be the most bewildering fighter in the UFC. He has tons of talent. He's a really athletic. You know, he trains with some great guys, and yet for whatever reason, he just can't finish fights. And in fact, if you look at his last seven fights, he is 1-5-1 in his last seven. We're talking about laying 2.5-1 with a guy who is 1-5-1 in his last seven. I know the total here is a little bit chalky, but at the end of the day, Clay Guida's last three wins come by decision. And he hasn't been getting finished himself too much. He did get finished by Jim Miller, and most of his losses by finish come by submission. He doesn't tend to get knocked out a lot. He tends to get submitted. He's lost by submission 10 times in his career. But I don't know that Bobby Green's going to be able to submit him here. In fact, I think there's going to be a lot of scrambles. I think there'll be a lot of, volume strikes here by both guys. Clay Guida has always been a volume striker. Bobby Green, a little bit of a volume striker himself. I think if I was going to bet Green, I would more likely look to Green to win by decision. And the same thing, if I was going to take a shot at Clay Guida, rather than just taking plus 200, why not take like plus 800 on Clay Guida to win by decision? I think this fight has such a good chance to make it to the judges' scorecard that maybe if the odds are even right, you could take both guys to win by decision. Although I think when they come out around here this afternoon, you're probably going to see Bobby Green by decision at minus 120 or even money because it's the most likely outcome. But this is one, regardless of the smaller octagon and the age of Clay Guida, who's now 38 years old, I still think this one's most likely to hit the judges' scorecard. Thus, if you like Bobby Green, maybe you play him by decision here because, again, I'm not going to play this fight at all, but I'm a little bit weary of ever laying that kind of price on a guy who's 1-5-1 in his last seven fights.
All right. Well, the over-under, just not picking a winner, over-under is over 2.5 minus -185. The next fight here is one I really like, Brianna Van Buren's minus 215. So there's some chalk there. But in this strawweight matchup, it just feels like one-sided. Torres has lost four straight, all by unanimous decision. Just Van Buren's just the more complete fighter. I think it's just going to be one-sided from the start.
Yeah, Van Buren's probably the most interesting prospect in the women's strawweight division. She came into the UFC with a little bit of hype out of Invicta, someone who's super athletic, has a really good grappling game, and trains at an amazing gym in the American Kickboxing Academy. And you're right, Tisha Torres, who started her UFC career on fire, is a pure bulldog of a wrestler. The problem is people figured her out quickly, that her only method of victory was that wrestling game. And if you stop that wrestling game or stuff that wrestling game at Tisha Torres, there's just not much happening. Her striking's really raw. She's really short for the division at only 5'1". So she always is at a massive height and reach disadvantage, which she will be here again against Van Buren, who at 26 years old just seems to be figuring it all out. I'm with you. I tried to find a reason to maybe take a flyer on the dog here. I couldn't find one. I will say this, though. Tisha Torres is really tough, and I think that's why we're seeing one of the craziest spreads on this card, which is the total on this fight, which is 2.5 rounds over minus 400. So, I mean, they're really telling you the script here that it's supposed to be Van Buren by a pretty clear unanimous decision.
Yeah, I'm even seeing 455 at Bookmaker, so that's some serious juice. Any of the rest of the cards, anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I did have a bet on Matt Frivola. Unfortunately, just a few minutes ago, the Frivola fight got canceled as one of his cornermen tested positive for COVID. And Frivola is one of those guys that came out of that Sarah Longo gym that's been so successful lately. But obviously, we won't get too into that fight since it's canceled, but I did play there. I do have two plays on one fight, and it's Courtney Casey and the over in that fight. So Courtney Casey, somebody, again, when we talk about fighters that have fought a murderer's row, she's fought some of the toughest fighters there are at strawweight and really held her own. And in many of those cases, if she just had a little more output or got up from one of those takedowns where sometimes she's happy to just use positioning, then I think her record would be much better. I mean, she was very competitive against Cynthia Calvillo, who just won in the main event last week. Most people thought she beat Michelle Waterson in that fight. Another split decision loss to Felice Herrig. Just so many split decision losses for Courtney Casey. I certainly think she's live as an underdog here. The problem is a lot of other people also do, and we've seen those odds drop dramatically. But what I really like in this fight is the over 2.5 rounds minus 140. Six of Courtney Casey's last seven fights have gone the distance. She changed gyms. She has a much more, her defensive grappling has really improved. And at this point, she's taking on a fighter in Robertson who almost all of her wins come by submission. And I don't know that you're going to be able to submit Courtney Casey here. She just doesn't get submitted anymore. And thus, if there's not going to be a submission win for Jillian Robertson, neither one of these young ladies is a power puncher. I don't think there's any chance that Courtney Casey gets submitted in this fight since she changed to the MMA lab in Phoenix, Arizona, which is just loaded with amazing grapplers, including Henry Cejudo. I think the most likely scenario here is that the wrestling kind of nullifies each other, and this could turn into a kickboxing match with two young ladies that aren't necessarily power strikers. And I think minus 140 is a pretty good value to lay, considering six of the last seven fights against Courtney Casey, many of them against more elite fighters, all went to decision. I think this one does too. 140 is a fair price to lay.
That's interesting because I actually like the under. So we're a little bit opposite. I just think each fighter is going to try to win with their style early. But I certainly see where you're coming from. I mean, you mentioned Casey's experience and six of her last seven fights have gone the distance, but she's been facing such tough competition. I think it's a, kind of step down a little bit, right?
And maybe, and that's why I played Casey as well. Cause I actually think if there's going to be a finish here, it's probably going to be Casey because I think she's going to be able to handle. I'm not saying she won't get taken down. She might. Michelle Waterson took her down several times. But I think even if she gets taken down, her submission defense is really, really good since she changed to MMA lab in Phoenix. And thus, I don't think Robertson can win by finish. But maybe you're right. Casey could. And that's why I also bet Casey has the dog and the over.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Someone I really respect took Murphy plus money in the flyweight bout, just far more, not as experienced, but it's just, just not getting enough respect in there.
Yeah, and I think some of it has to do with narrative. So there's been some stats put out, and it's easy to grab any particular stats in any sport. You know that. You grab
sure.
a cool trend or something and it really backs up your side. Well, there's been some really negative stats out there against Mata Fari. And some of the fights where she had, I think it was the Macy Barber fight and one other fight where she landed like 9 significant strikes the entire fight in a fight that went the distance. And thus people are looking at her output saying, if this is someone who lands such little significant strikes per fight, then certainly Lauren Murphy's probably live here.
Interesting. Okay. Anything else, catching your eye?
No, that's about it for me. We lost a couple of fights.
Yeah.
The other fight that I thought was interesting is Max Roshoff.
Right, Hubbard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotten so high, the odds on that fight. And Roshoff is a guy who's 5-0 with 5 submission wins and a great grappler. But we've seen it time and time again, these guys, that are great on the regional scene, but make their UFC debuts and wilt under the bright lights.
But yeah, I agree. But Hubbard's 1-2 in the UFC, needs a win himself. So it's not like, this is a, it could maybe not even be a step up, but you're right. The odds are up to $1.95, $2 maybe. I think Hubbard's going to have a weakness of preventing the takedown, but still, yeah, it's a pass for me. But yeah, too rich for my blood.
Yeah, pass for me as well.
Great stuff as always, Matthew. I know you got to run. Thank you very much for giving us the time. I know our listeners appreciate it, and let's stay hot here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doug. Always a pleasure. Best of luck this weekend.
Kicking is for losers.
Thanks again to Matthew Holt of U.S. Integrity. Clearly knows his MMA, so we appreciate his sharing some wisdom with us. Always good. And these cards have been fun, so I hope everyone enjoys them this weekend. Also, back is golf. That's right. We have a full weekend of golf ahead of us and the rest of the summer. And even though the trophy is reserved for the winner, the big cash prizes don't have to be. To add to the excitement, DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, is putting you in the center of the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. It's easy to play. Just pick six golfers, stay under the salary cap, and submit your lineup before the tournament tees off on Thursday. Then sit back and follow the action. The more red numbers they have on the leaderboard, the closer you'll be to winning some green. Rack up points for pars, birdies, finishing position, and more. And in a time of limited sports, this is your chance to scratch your competitive itch and reign supreme. Download the DraftKings app now and use code Doug during signup. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes. That's code Doug, D-O-U-G, and you can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, Christina, it is a lot of fun to kind of put together your short-term fantasy roster, if you will. I know we did a lot of picks on ESPN.com's chalk section. I got Victor Hovland is sort of like my main guy, and he's I think he's tied for the lead so far, or at least a stroke back, I should say. So I gave out that pick and some other guys. So we have a lot of good content on ESPN.com's chalk section, and then you can go compete in the DraftKings daily fantasy, basically. So that's going to do it for us. A lot of fun here. Christina, I expect you to be firing on some UFC bouts this weekend.
I'm actually getting more into it. I've decided that UFC and golf are the next two sports I'm going to tackle and understand how to gamble them.
Good. Well, we need to root in Victor Hovland this weekend. That's most important. He shot a 6-under on Thursday, so we're at least looking good after that 65 heading into rounds two and hopefully the weekend after that. Thanks to everyone for downloading and listening. We'll be back next week. Much more action. We're going to be back throughout the rest of the summer. We hope baseball will have an announcement between now and when this posts. It could be any second now. Obviously, the NBA around the corner. And I mentioned ESPN.com's chalk section, but go check that out again. Plenty of betting content on there as well.